Welcome to the Series 7 Study Guide. My name is Franz. As you know, this podcast is giving you samples of the full audio course, which is 58 lessons in length and over 25 hours for the Series 7 exam. Now, once you pass the Series 7 exam, there's probably, well, there will be several other exams that you need to pass, and they include the Series 63 exam. Possibly for your firm, it might be the Series 67 exam. And if you're going to be selling annuities or talking to your clients about insurance products, then you're going to have to pass the insurance life health exam. Now, this is a state exam, and it's administered by your state because insurance is regulated state by state. And of course, you've learned that if you've taken the full Series 7 study guide, audio series of lessons in the study guide, or if you just passed the exam already, you know that. Well, to help you pass the life health exam, I put together, just like this, an audio course for you. And it's 12 hours in length, it's 26 lessons, and an additional 4 review lessons to bring the total number of audio files to 30. Now, the purpose of this course is not meant to replace your classroom time. In fact, most likely you're going to be required to sit in a classroom to even take the exam. I know that was the case when I took the insurance exam many years ago. But again, the purpose of the audio course is to allow you to study while you're commuting, exercising, or just going for a walk. You're not tied to a desk or tied to a chair to read a book. And it'll help you reinforce the material that you're learning in the class and in the book. So just like with the Series 7 podcast, I'm going to give you some sample lessons, and then if they make sense for you, then you might want to consider purchasing the full audio course at the website. Now, I'm going to put this audio course at the Series 7 podcast website, and also I'm setting up a new website, which is called the insuranceexampodcast.com, and you'll be able to download it there or purchase it there, either place. But again, this is an exam that you may or may not have to pass, depending on if you're going to be selling insurance products. So I'm going to give you 5 sample lessons at this podcast. And if it makes sense for you, go to the website, series7podcast.com, and go to the audio study products, and there will be a link to be able to purchase this series of lessons. Or you might go to the insuranceexampodcast.com and purchase it at that website. As you can see, the path I'm going down is basically professional audio courses for the professional to help them pass various exams along the way. But I do have one other series of podcasts that I've talked about before that if you're interested in, you might take a look at. You know my passion is sailing, and I spend about 2 months every year sailing in the Mediterranean, taking my clients sailing with me, and I have a podcast called Sailing in the Mediterranean and Beyond, and that's over at medsailor.com. And I put together a series of audio lessons there to help you pass the ASA 101. That's the American Sailing Association Exam 101, which is basic keelboat certification, the 103, which is the basic coastal cruising certification, and the ASA 104, which is the bareboat certification. Now, the reason people try to get these certifications is nowadays, if you want to go charter a boat, a bareboat charter, in some exotic location, most of the charter companies require that you have one of 2 certifications or one of 3 certifications. The American Sailing Association is one of those certifications that is accepted by most charter companies. But again, I have a lot of podcasts over there just talking about my adventures sailing in the Mediterranean. So if that's of interest to you, check it out. And that's at medsailor.com. All right, let's get on to the insurance Life Health Exam Sample Audio Lessons.
Welcome to this lesson entitled Disability Income Insurance. When a person is disabled and not able to work, then their income stops, and that can become a very large problem to someone who's been depending on that income for so long. Sometimes you hear disability called a living death because you're not be able to provide for yourself even though you still are alive. You're not dead, but the expenses that you have from day to day, the bills and other expenses, just keep piling up. And really, the chances of someone becoming disabled are much higher at a younger age than of a person dying at a younger age. So it's something that people really should plan for, though many people don't even think about it. When you're planning your finances, there are certain things you need to take into account. First, you should think about what the minimum income would be that your family could live on if your income stopped because of disability. Then you need to think about trying to maintain your retirement plan if you have such a plan that's going to be need to keep being paid into, even if you're disabled, so that you'll have more income down the road. You need to think about any other benefits that you're going to get through Social Security, workers' compensation, if it was something that happened on the job. And then you need long-term disability coverage from your job, if you can get that, or some other way. That's going to help cover for the waiting period of Social Security, if that comes into play. There are other things that you can do besides disability income insurance, but a lot of them are very difficult choices. For one, you could simply use savings. If you save a portion of your paycheck every month, and you just keep that as sort of a rainy day fund that you don't touch, then that's something that can help you during a period of disability or unemployment. You could consider borrowing the money, but the problem is it's very hard to get a loan if you don't have any income. You'd have to show some other asset and be willing to lose that if you couldn't pay back what you borrowed. Depending on a spouse's income or another family member's, but this can be very difficult, you're going to have to then cut back your lifestyle significantly, your standard of living, whatever that happens to be. Or you can go ahead and liquidate your assets, such as vehicles, property, houses, that sort of thing. But usually disability comes on pretty unexpected, and so this can be a difficult thing to do if you suddenly need to sell a car or sell your house or something like that. So in this lesson, you're going to be learning about what disability income insurance means, what it can do. Disability income insurance is defined as a contract that pays a monthly benefit following whatever elimination period the contract sets up for total disability that happens because of either somebody got sick or there was an accident. Some disability policies can also pay for partial or residual disability as well as total disability. Now, total disability just meaning that you are completely disabled, you can't do any meaningful work anymore. So let's jump into some of the terminology that you're going to need to know in order to understand disability income insurance. The first is called a probationary period. A probationary period is also sometimes known as a qualification period, and it's found in some disability income policies. It's a time that begins when the policy goes into effect. And during this period, there are no benefits that are going to be paid out. So it's kind of a waiting time. It's usually between 15 to 30 days, or even sometimes 60 days if it's a large policy. And the probationary period usually applies to just sicknesses, not necessarily to accidents, because they're more sudden and more unforeseen, usually. And the reason they have this probationary period is it's to help the insurance company not have to pay for pre-existing conditions, which are health problems that existed before the policy went into effect. But then it really just also means that you don't get covered during that time as well. The next is known as the elimination period. And this is the period for which an insured person must be disabled before the benefits start being paid. It's sort of a deductible of time rather than a dollar deductible. So in a lot of health insurance policies, you have a dollar deductible. You have to reach $500 or $1,000 or $3,000, whatever, before the health insurance fully kicks in. And this is sort of, instead of a dollar deductible, it's a time deductible. You have to meet this certain time period before the benefits fully kick in. If the insured has an elimination period of 45 days and is disabled for 75 days, they're only going to be paid out for the last 30 days. So the elimination period's the 45, nothing will be paid out, but on day 46, the benefits start. Elimination periods can be in a variety of types. So there's could be as short as 30 days, about a month, or as long as 180 days, or even longer than that, depending on what the contract says, and depending on the type of coverage sought. The longer the elimination period, the smaller the insurance premium is going to be. Because the insured is willing to go without benefits for this longer period of time, so that the insurer is not going to have to pay for anything that's a short-term thing. They're only going to have to pay for something that's a real long-term disability. For example, if you chose to have a 180-day waiting period, your premium would probably be rather low because the insurer knows that they're only going to have to pay for things that last longer than 180 days. And those are a lot rarer than something that could, say, keep you out of work for 60 days or 90 days. Next, we have what's called the benefit period. And after the elimination period has ended and the monthly disability benefits then start, you enter what's called the benefit period. And the so that's just the time during which benefits are being paid out. They can be as short as a year, 2 years, 5 years, or to a certain age, such as until you reach age 65, and then something else kicks in. So let's say you have a 2 year benefit period after a 30-day elimination period. So you wait 30 days, and on day 31, you start getting paid a monthly benefit. And so for the 2 years, every month following that 30-day period, you get paid your monthly benefit. And the longer the benefit period, the higher the policy's premium is going to be, because that makes sense. They're paying out money for a longer period of time, and so they need you to put more money in premiums in order to cover that. Let's go ahead and talk about what total disability means. So that's a term that's important when determining whether someone gets disability income in the first place. So the major purpose of having disability insurance is to cover for total disabilities. And two things are considered when we look at this: the insured's occupation and the occupation that the insured may be qualified to perform. So let's first talk about the first stipulation. It's called own occupation. The first way that total disability might be defined has to do with the occupation that the individual usually has. So the person's usually a lawyer or a teacher or a doctor or a pilot, whatever it is that they usually do. In this case, total disability means that the insured can't perform any or all of the duties of his or her own occupation. And this refers also to the occupation that the person has when the disability begins. So let's say, for example, somebody is a pilot. They are in an accident and they lose vision in both eyes, so they become blind. They're no longer going to be able to be a pilot. And so under this definition, they are totally disabled. They can't perform any or all of their duties of their own occupation. The second consideration is any occupation. And this is a much more restrictive view of total disability. So the first one is a little bit less restrictive. This one is a more restrictive one. This definition of total disability says that an insured has to be unable to perform the duties of any occupation for which the insured is reasonably qualified because of the education and the training that they've received. So, for example, if somebody had a job where they had to use their hands a lot, and then they were in an accident and lost the use of their hands, but they were still able to do something else that didn't require them to work with their hands, such as, say, teaching or something else like that, then under this second definition, they would not be totally disabled, and so they would not qualify. When we talk about these two different definitions of total disability, the own occupation and the any occupation, there are a couple different variations. Some policies even have what's called a two-tier definition. The first tier is then the insured's own occupation during the disability, and then it shifts to any occupation in the second tier. These two-tier policies usually say that total disability is the inability to perform your own job for a period of 2 to 5 years, and after that, the inability to perform the duties of any job for which you might be qualified, depending on your education and experience. And this is known as the loss of earnings test for disability. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between injury and sickness. Total disability is sometimes defined by the terms of what caused the disability. Different policies cover different causes differently. So they cover things that are accidents different than things that are caused by sickness. So you might hear the terms total accident disability or total sickness disability. So whether they're totally disabled by an accident or totally disabled by a sickness. We also have the distinction between occupational versus non-occupational. Short-term policies usually only cover non-occupational disabilities. Those are things that didn't happen because of your job. And most long-term plans, on the other hand, cover both occupational and non-occupational sicknesses and accidents. Sometimes, especially with older people, you also have to say they have to meet the definition of total disability, and they also have to be confined to their house or under the treatment of a doctor or something like that. And this is called a medically defined disability. The next term we should talk about is called presumptive disability. And so the presumptive disability are the criteria that they use to classify a complete or total disability. So there's a kind of a checklist to say if any of these things are true, then they're presumed to be totally disabled. So they don't have to prove it another way. They're just presumed to be disabled because they have these certain things. Things that are generally considered as these presumptive disability criteria are the loss of any two limbs. So you lose two arms, two legs, an arm and a leg. That's considered presumptive disability. Total permanent blindness or loss of speech and hearing. All of those things can make you presume to be disabled. However, if you only lose one limb, that doesn't kick in. So if you say you get in a car accident, a leg is badly crushed and it has to be amputated, that's only one limb, unfortunately. So you don't fall under that definition. Next, we have what's called partial disability. Total disability, as we've talked about, is the inability to perform the duties of your own occupation for an extended period of time. Some people suffer less than this complete disability. And that's called a partial disability. They can't perform everything that their job requires, but they can perform one or more of the sort of core responsibilities of that job, especially if they have some sort of assistive devices. Let's say a person works in a factory, they're disabled, they get an accident, and they're unable to walk. So they're not able to walk around on the factory floor, but they are able to go then do paperwork or other jobs that they can just sit and do. So they can still do part of their responsibilities. They just can't do everything they did before. This is a partial disability. So the usual payout for a partial disability is 50% of the monthly or weekly amount that you would get for total disability as defined under your plan. For example, if your total disability policy said that you're going to get $5,000 a month paid out, then it will probably pay $2,500 for the partial disability. And these benefits are usually paid over a much shorter term, a matter of months rather than a matter of years. And what's interesting is that a single person might receive both total and partial disability benefits as the result of a single incident. They might be totally disabled for, say, the first 5 or 6 months, but then they'll return to work and they'll perform some of their duties some of the time for an additional 3 months. So they start out as totally disabled and they move into partial disability, and then hopefully down the road they go back to being fully competent with all of their abilities. The next term we should talk about is called residual disability. Many policies have replaced the so partial disability provision with what's called a residual disability provision. And this residual benefit is usually a percentage of the total disability benefit for a certain time. And it's for times when the insured is unable to perform some of their duties, and this results in a loss of income. They're not able to work as many hours. They're not able to do certain things that allow them to advance and gain more income. And this benefit focuses a lot more on the loss of earnings rather than, say, the physical limitations. So the partial disability provisions look more at what can't they do at the moment. And this looks more at what sort of income are they losing. For example, if a person earns $3,000 a month before they are disabled, they would receive a partial repayment of their salary under the residual disability, a percentage of it, so that they could recoup some of those losses. Next, we have what's called a recurrent disability. Sometimes, after the disability seems like it's all done and they've returned to work and everything seems to be going fine, the disability can recur. The same illness or problem that came from an accident can flare up again, causing a second period of disability from the same or a similar reason to the one that happened before. So this is called a recurrent disability. It reoccurs in the person's life. Most policies say that if the insured returns to work for a certain period of time after they've been originally disabled, a reoccurrence then is handled as a new claim, requiring a new elimination period rather than a sort of continuing with the previous claim. Usually this is about 90 days, though it can be as much as 6 months. So if it's been more than this stipulated period, then it's just treated as a new claim. However, if it happens within this 90-day window or whatever window it is, it can be treated as sort of a continuance of the original one. So they don't have to have a new elimination period, and then they can just get back on the original claim. Another term we should talk about is permanent disability. Disability, either talk about it as a permanent disability or a temporary one. And in addition to calling it either a total disability or a partial one, a permanent disability is one that reduces or completely gets rid of a person's ability to work normally for the rest of their life. It's a permanent thing. It's not going away. There's an injury or a sickness from which the person is not expected to recover, such as if you lose a limb, that's a permanent thing. You can get a prosthetic limb, but you're never going to have your original limb back. Or your loss of sight, loss of hearing can often be permanent, that sort of problem. A temporary disability happens when the insured is unable to work while recovering from this illness or injury, but they are expected to fully recover from the injury. So it's not permanent. It's not going to be there for the rest of their lives. So instead of saying you broke your leg, that you lost your leg completely, maybe you broke your leg. So yes, it is going to require some time in a cast or on crutches where you're going to be limited, but you're not going to be completely disabled for the rest of your life. We also have what's called a confining versus a non-confining disability. These are also additional categories in which disabilities can fall. And some policies treat these a little bit different. A total confining disability is a condition that requires the person to stay indoors, either in a hospital or in a home, that sort of situation. So if they have something that is very contagious or something that has compromised their immune system and they need not to be out in public, this would be an example of a confining disability. They have to be in the hospital or they have to be bedridden at home, that sort of thing. And then we have a non-confining disability, and that's one where the person is disabled, but they don't have to remain indoors. They can come and go. Even if they are sick, they're allowed to, say, leave the hospital for short times, or they're able to leave their home in order to do things. Usually they have to come back to the hospital or their home, but they're allowed to leave. Next we have what's called accidental means. And it's one of the terms that we use to talk about accidents. Accidental body injury and accidental means are both terms you're going to need to know. A policy that says that has the term accidental means is a little bit more restrictive than ones that simply says accidental bodily injury. So if it says accidental means, it's much more restrictive. It needs to be a situation in which it could not have been foreseen. If somebody does something, even though it's an accident, that they were being negligent, they could have prevented it, then they might not be covered. However, if there's something that was totally unforeseeable, something that was not in their control, then they would be covered. We also need to talk about the definition of sickness. A sickness, or sometimes called an illness, can also be defined in either a more restrictive manner or a less restrictive manner. For example, it might have the phrase, it's a sickness or disease that first manifests itself after the effective date of the policy. This can exclude things that started happening before the policy went into effect. So these pre-existing conditions that can prevent somebody from getting covered for something that started before the insurance policy did. And that's going to be all for our lesson on disability income insurance.
Thank you for listening. Again, if this makes sense, if you like the teaching style, if it's helping you learn, consider buying the full series of lessons by going to audio products at theseries7podcast.com or go over and check out the insuranceexampodcast.com. They should be available at both sites, but the Insurance Exam Podcast website at this point in time, at this recording, is a work in progress. And it may or may not be available there yet. Just check it out. And if it is, that's fine. If not, buy them under audio products at theseries7podcast.com. Thanks for listening. If you have any thoughts, comments, suggestions, write me, Franz@series7podcast.com. Good luck in your studies.